हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्थु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so from reading from Mahabharata, the martial exhibition. So we remember before that Drona was teaching all the students and everything, so now they've been trained, and so then after that, then they'll have a show so that the public, you know, and also all the elders and leaders of the society, then they can feel, say, satisfied at their education, that they, you know, they properly know, they can do things very nicely. Chapter 5. Among Drona's pupils, Bhima and Duryodhana, deadly rivals, both became matchless in mace fighting, right, so in the club. So Bhima and Duryodhana were the best at the clubs. Yudhishthira was the greatest spearman and chariot fighter, right, because a spearman means that you have the spears that be able to throw the spears or, you know, work with the spears and that, and fighting within the chariot. Nakula and Sahadeva were the best swordsmen, so they could fight with a sword better than all the other students. So what's being listed here is who was the best in each area of the fighting. And Ashwatthama showed the greatest ability at mystical weapons, right, the celestial weapons. Because remember that Dronacharya, after teaching everyone else, would teach something extra to Ashwatthama by that trick of giving the small pots and the big pots, you know, with the small mouth and the big mouth. And so then Ashwatthama had one with the big mouth so it would fill up quickly, while everybody else had the ones with the small mouth so it would take a little extra time. So in that few extra seconds and all that, then he would teach him something. But Arjuna would fill his pot by mantra with the water weapon. And in this way, he would show up even before Ashwatthama. But, you know, so he knew that. Arjuna, however, excelled everyone in all aspects. He became an Atirati, a warrior capable of fighting 60,000 other warriors simultaneously. But, you know, so you hear in the modern kind of things that you can fight, you know, with three people at once, or, you know, so many, or a group, a dozen people. But here it's 60,000 warriors. So it's not just people that don't know something. So you have the Rati who can fight with a thousand, Maharati who can fight with 10,000, and Atirati who can fight with 60,000. So Arjuna was an Atirati. So he's, you know, topmost. This only increased the envy Dhritarashtra's sons felt towards him, as well as towards his brother, the mighty Bhima. Right? So that they all get trained and they're all very good, right? Duryodhana is good, they're all good. But that Arjuna is the best, it just makes Duryodhana and his brothers feel even more envious. And then Bhima is as good as Duryodhana. And so then they're on equal matches there. So they're both physically very strong, they're both good at the club. And we, as we saw before, Duryodhana specifically wants to get rid of Bhima, right, because he's so strong. But we see as Arjuna is now more powerful. One day, Drona decided to test the student's abilities. He placed an artificial bird high in a tree. Calling together all the princes, he said to each of them, "Take your bows and aim for the bird's eye. One by one, I shall call you forward to shoot." Right. So he's put a bird and a artificial bird, you know, in the tree, and you know, up in the tree, and so then he'll call them forward one by one, and you're to aim at the eye of the bird, right? The first to be called was Yudhishthira. When he had placed an arrow on his bow and aimed, Drona asked, "Oh, prince, tell me what you see." Right, so he's ready to shoot, but he won't shoot until he's ordered. So then he's asking him, okay, so now you have your bow, you have your arrow, you're aiming at the bird in the tree. What do you actually see? Yudhishthira replied that he saw his brothers, Drona, the tree, and the bird. Drona asked him again and again what he saw, and each time received the same reply. Drona then reproached him and told him to stand down without firing the arrow. You will not be able to hit the mark, he said with annoyance. Right, so he's asking, what do you see? You know, so then he's seeing his brothers that are there, he's seeing Dronacharya, sees the tree, and he sees the bird. And then asking him again and again, is this what he sees? And he says, yes. So then he says, then you step back, you don't shoot, you won't be able to hit. Duryodhana was next to be called, because Yudhishthira is the head of the Pandavas, so Duryodhana is the head of the Kauravas. When he was ready to fire, Drona asked him the same question. The prince replied as Yudhishthira replied, and again Drona told him to stand down. Each prince was called, and each responded to Drona similarly, and was not allowed to shoot at the bird. Finally, Arjuna was called, after everybody, right? Because then, he being the best, and in this case, he would be the last. Let everybody else show their ability. When he was prepared to shoot and was standing with his bow drawn in a semicircle, Drona said, tell me what you can see. Can you see myself, your brothers, and the tree? Arjuna replied, I see only the bird. I cannot see you or my brothers, nor the tree. Drona was pleased. He waited a moment and asked, if you see the bird, then please describe it to me. Arjuna responded, I see only the bird's head. I cannot see its body. Drona's bodily hair stood on end. He said, shoot. Arjuna released his arrow and it struck the wooden bird in the eye, sending it tumbling to the ground. With tears of joy, Drona embraced his disciple as Duryodhana and his brothers looked on in frustration. Right? Because the point is that you have a target, he just sees that target. There's nothing else that's important that's distracting. Because in this case, it's just the bow, the arrow, and the bird. Seeing Drona, seeing his brothers, seeing the tree does not add to it. Right? In other words, what is necessary that you see? Right? It's not that, oh, he can't see things that are important. He only sees what is important. So then that's what then makes him very special. The other ones get distracted. He doesn't get distracted. Sometime after that, Drona went with the princes to the Ganges to bathe. As he entered the water, a fierce crocodile seized him. Although capable of freeing himself, Drona cried out, boys, come quickly, kill this beast and rescue me. Right, so he's strong enough to take care, but he's testing. Right? Like we said, before he had this test, now here's another one. The princes were confounded with sorrow at seeing their teacher held by the crocodile. They froze in fear, all except Arjuna. He instantly fired 5 arrows that struck the reptile under the water and cut it to pieces. Its mouth fell open and released Drona's leg. Right, so that's another aspect, is that when it's one thing you're trained, and when you're trained, then you're naturally going to see, you can explain all the different situations that you use this in and that in, and if this happens, you do this, and if that happens, you do that. But then there's the actual use of it. When the actual time is there, you have to use something, then you see, because they're warriors, that it's not going to be necessarily a pleasant situation. It's going to be a dangerous situation. So the other ones, then they got frightened, just surprised by it, didn't know what to do, but Arjuna immediately just took his bow and arrow and shot the crocodile. So that means the others have the knowledge, but he's brought that knowledge to realization, to the point of science, right? Because science means you know how to apply it. Art means you can, discuss the various ways and this with this and that, but science means you can actually do it. So he was the best at it. That's why he was the best, because he could actually practically apply it, no matter what the situation. Drona came to the riverbank and took Arjuna aside. He said to him, I wish to give you the greatest of weapons. Take from me the knowledge of the Brahmastra, the irresistible missile endowed with Brahma's power, right? Of all the different weaponry, the Brahmastra is considered to be the most powerful. So that you could only give to someone who actually has the character and ability to use. So Arjuna showed he has that character, he has that ability. While others, you see, Duryodhana tends to be, and his brothers are envious, and that, or others don't have the qualification, or different things like that. So Arjuna then had everything. So then he was given. This weapon should only be used against supernatural foes, right? For if it's released against others, it will destroy the very world, right? So if you have a supernatural person, then they have so much power. You use the Brahmastra, it'll just destroy them. But if you send it at ordinary people, it just what destroy everything. You see, like modern, they use the nuclear power, they can't control it, so it just creates so much problem. But then they could exactly aim it at something specific, and it would only destroy that because it's in a supernatural position. So it's not supposed to be used outside of that. Drona then told Arjuna that no one would ever become superior to him with a bow. He was now invincible. Seeing that the princes had become expert in arms and warfare, Drona went to Dhritarashtra and said, "My lord, your sons have completed their education. With your permission, they may now display their proficiency. Let me therefore arrange an exhibition." Right, so he's taught them whatever they can learn, and we see from that Arjuna is the best. That doesn't mean the other ones are bad. It just means that they're good and he's super excellent. Dhritarashtra thanked Drona for instructing the princes and said, "I envy those able to witness the prowess of my sons. I shall attend the display with Vidura, who will be my eyes. With his assistance, please make the preparations, O best of the Brahmins." Drona and Vidura went outside the city and selected a large flat piece of land. After sanctifying the spot with prayers and offerings to the gods, Drona had skilled architects construct a great stadium, right? So they're going to do some kind of Vastu Puja and everything like that. So you look for what the land that's auspicious, that has the proper things, all the different symptoms that it's good, you know, auspicious, then they do the pujas, and then they start construction. He had a vast central area and platforms rising on all four sides. Wealthy merchants sponsored the installation of thousands of beautiful seats, carved from wood and inlaid with ivory and pearls. Rows of golden thrones encrusted with coral and gems were built on the royal platform. The stadium's size reached up to the sky and were adorned with tall white flagstaffs bearing colored pennants that fluttered in the breeze. So you have the central area where the exhibition's going to be. Then on the four sides, then you have the whole area for sitting for all the different persons. So the Kshatriyas on one side, Brahmins one side, Vaishyas one side, the Shudras one side. And so then everybody is going to come and see. So that's the thing, is even though it's an exhibition for the king to see that his children are properly trained, but it's also so that everybody can see and be confident that the next generation of kings have come up and they're going to protect the kingdom and they're going to rule nicely. So you want everyone there. You want the common person there. You want the businessmen there. You want the other Kshatriyas. You want the Brahmins. Because then in a safe environment, a protected environment, everybody prospers. Right? And so then behind all those seats, then they'd have rows of flagstaffs at the top with nice flags all fluttering in the breeze. So it makes a very, very nice arrangement. On an auspicious day determined by the royal astrologers, the citizens entered the stadium eager to see the princes display their power. Bhishma and Vidura, leading Dhritarashtra by the arm, walked at the head of the procession. Drona and Kripa immediately followed them, along with other members of the royal party, such as Bahlika, Somadatta, and other kings visiting from surrounding kingdoms. So that I remember, Bahlika is the brother of Shantanu. So that's why in the Gita, when it talks about great-grandparents and like that, because Bahlika, and maybe even Somadatta is in that category. But they're like the senior most of all the Kshatriyas that are there, other than Bhishma, right? Then Dhritarashtra is because he's the king, Vidura because he's his prime minister. So then they're going to be in the lead, and then actually the next respectable group of kings, you know, the teachers are coming and like this. The royal ladies came out of the city dressed in dazzling robes and ornaments, accompanied by numerous maids in waiting. The ladies ascended the royal platforms like goddesses ascending the royal holy Mount Meru. Because Mount Meru's there, and on the sides of it, then all the different demigods will come and you know, spend time, you know, afternoons, have picnics, and just, you know, just have a pleasant time. So the all the royal ladies, how they came out and dressed and how they went up and how they sat, it was like, the, you know, the heavenly ladies were taking their places on Mount Meru. Crowds of citizens of all four castes thronged into the stadium and marveled at his beauty, right? So the stadium itself is very, very nice. Large sections were built of pure gold, studded with priceless Vaidurya gems. It was decorated with countless garlands of bright flowers and strings of pearls, right? So they put garlands and pearls as decoration, you know. So the amount of wealth and opulence that they had was so great that they have that many flowers and that many people to make. And so these things are all very important, you know, part of lifestyle. So therefore, flowers are a major part of people's lives. So therefore, so many flowers are there. There are so many people who could make garlands and arrange flowers. So it was always going on because everybody would be decorating their house, decorating the gates in the city and all that. So it was constantly. So it wasn't just, you know, be regularly being done. So it's a, yeah. The sound of people filling the stadium was like the surging ocean, right? So many people coming and excited and moving, and that it would make sounds like when the ocean's coming in, you know, like this. Trumpets were blown and drums beaten, mixed with the blasts of thousands of conch shells and the excited talk of the people. So all this is happening at once. You can see it's a very, very excited atmosphere. You know, the bugles are blowing, the conch shells are blowing, drums are beating, the people are talking and excited. When everyone was seated, Drona entered the arena with his son, Ashwatthama. Right, so he comes into the middle. So everyone's sitting around the sides. He wore white robes and white garlands, and his body was smeared white with sandalwood paste. His hair and beard were also white, because, you know, you'd be elderly at this time. With his powerful son, he looked like the moon accompanied by Mars. The noise of the crowd subsided as Drona entered, right? Because they're all, you know, talking and that, and talking about how wonderful it is and this and that. And so then when Drona comes in, because everyone knows it's going to be an exhibition of the prince's valor, and Drona is the teacher. So when he comes in, then he must be the master of ceremonies. So everything's going to start. Drona then had a large number of Brahmins perform auspicious rites in the arena, right? So the swasti vachana and those things where they chant mantras and throw rice and these kind of things. The mantras echoed around the stadium. Expert musicians simultaneously played their instruments, creating a sound that pleased and calmed the expectant audience, right? So the chanting of mantras along with the playing of the musical instruments, those two go together. You know, it's just like when we do the yajna, the mahayajna, and that, then the boys are playing the musical instruments and all that. So it just adds to the nice flavor that's there. So in other words, the instruments don't overpower the chanting, they just nicely match the chanting. That's the balance. The princes then entered the arena, headed by Yudhishthira, and striding like proud and mighty lions. They were clad in brilliant armor and equipped with every kind of weapon. Drona ordered them to show off their different skills. Beginning with Yudhishthira, the princes stepped forward one by one. They mounted swift horses and rode them expertly, wheeling about the arena and hitting both still and moving targets with arrows engraved with their respective names. Right, so they can go and get their arrows back. Thousands of arrows sped in all directions, and some of the citizens ducked in fear. Right, but you know it's not going to go and bother the citizens, but it's just so... because it's all happening at once. So they step forward, and then after that, everybody's doing something. So it'd be, yeah, like completely immersed inside this. Others were fearless, their eyes wide with wonder. Sounds of excellent, well done resounded throughout the stadium. The prince's weaponry skills, horseback riding, and chariot driving were breathtaking. After displaying all these skills, they pulled out their gleaming blue swords and shouting rushed at one another. Right, so the blue swords, that's the steel, the Damascus steel. So it was very famous in the West that it came from the Middle East. It was called Damascus steel, that's what they call it. But the Damascus steel didn't come from Damascus. They made swords out of it. The steel came from India. So India, they used it to make their swords. And they used one type of swords. In the Middle East, they used a different. So they just got the steel already. Then they formed it into the particular swords that it was to their liking. So in that, because of how it's purified and everything like that, it comes out a blue color. Because depending on how you deal with the metal, how you heat it, what you mix with it, all dealing, it will make all, you'll get different colors. They thrust and parried, adroitly dodging one another's attacks, right? So thrusting is you know, when they go forward, parrying is when someone attacks and you move it to the side and like that. The people saw with delight the grace, speed, and strength of all the princes, right? Because it's not that just they're taking, just hacking at one another. You know, they're actually able to fight in so many amazing ways. And just how they can fight, how they can move, have the quickness in which they do that, the quickness in which they can move and take a new stance, and that was very special. Drona then had Bhima and Duryodhana step forward to display mace fighting, right? Because they're the best at mace. The two heroes glared at each other and bellowed like furious bulls, right? So they're showing that off. So the others are just showing. But we see that with Bhima and Duryodhana, they actually don't like each other. So there's going to be something more happening. Holding aloft massive iron maces, they circled, each with his gaze riveted on the other. As Vidura described the scene to Dhritarashtra and Kunti to Gandhari, the two princes aimed terrific blows at each other. Their maces collided with thunderous clashes, sending showers of sparks into the air. Because you have iron on iron when they hit, and you get all these sparks. So it's not just a little tap here and there. They're actually sliding and smashing. And the sound, because it says they're very big, because they themselves are very big, very powerful. So they can use maces that no one else could even pick up. The crowd became divided. Some supported Bhima's, while others supported Duryodhana. Shouts of, "Behold the mighty Bhima!" and "Just see the powerful Duryodhana," filled the stadium. Drona realized that the fight was becoming too earnest, right? They were too focused on it. It wasn't just a show of technique. They actually were fighting each other. He also saw that the people were becoming too excited, right? Because they were taking sides and all that. Because before that, all the princes are just showing off their skills, and so the people are watching and very pleased. But here, Bhima and Duryodhana, they actually don't like each other. So they're fighting. There's a mood of trying to defeat. And the people catching that mood, they're also siding with each other. So it's becoming, the mood is changing and all that. So Drona thinks, okay, we have to stop this. He told his son to step between the two roaring rivals and stop them. Ashwatthama obeyed his father and, moving quickly forward, managed to separate the two princes. Right, so you understand how powerful Ashwatthama is. If he can, one, just by presence, and two, he can actually physically stop them. When Bhima and Duryodhana had stood down, still glaring at each other, right, so even though they stopped fighting, as they walk away, they're still staring at each other. Drona stepped into the middle of the arena. He stopped the musicians and spoke in a voice that resounded like thunder, right? Because now, again, he's shown everybody there. All it means all the different princes, what they can do, and all the amazing things, you know, and ended with Bhima and Drona, because they'll make the best show like this. But he now is the final show, right? "Behold now Arjuna's abilities," right? Because he's better than all of them. "He is dearer to me than my own son," right? And you see, he comes out with his son, does everything with his son. His son is the one that's, you know, arranging things. So Arjuna is even more. "The son of Indra is incomparable at every kind of martial skill," right? So being the son of Indra, then naturally Indra can use all variety of weapons. Right? As Drona spoke, Arjuna entered the arena, clad in golden armor, with a large golden quiver of arrows on his back. The illustrious prince appeared like a cloud reflecting the rays of the evening sun and illuminated by a rainbow and flashes of lightning. The invincible warrior walked with the gait of a lion, and as he glanced about the arena, he terrified all those upon whom his eyes fell. Right? Because Kshatriyas, their eyes are very, very powerful, very, very intense. And so when they look at something, you know, then it'll throw off. A cry of joy went up from the audience. People blew conches and played musical instruments. Quote, "This handsome youth is Kunti's third son, and he is the best of all virtuous men and the most powerful," right? Because he knows how to behave and all that. So it's not just that he's good at weaponry and all that. Like Ekalavya was good at weaponry but didn't have the character. But Arjuna is good at the weapons and has the character. So that's what you want in a king. Some people said, he is the son of the mighty Indra and the best protector of the Kuru race. And others added, all kinds of praises were heard from the crowd. Yes. Hearing these, Kunti's felt milk flow from her breasts. Along with her tears, it completely drenched her bosom, right? So her paternal, maternal affection was so great that, you know, she just had that feeling of that motherliness. Dhritarashtra asked Vidura why the people were shouting so joyously. When Vidura told him that it was because Arjuna had appeared, Dhritarashtra said, how blessed I am by Kunti's three sons. They are like the three sacrificial fires, and Kunti is like the sacred fuel. Right, so in the daily yagyas of the Brahmins and that, then when they're performing, there's three different fires. They have three different kundas that have three different fires in them. And then, so they're like that, you know, so that auspiciousness is there, and Kunti is the one that feeds, you know, and nourishes the fires. And so, you know, between Kunti and her sons, then he's saying we're so blessed. Because they are, as the Kurus, they are blessed to have the Pandavas. The only slight difficulty is Duryodhana would like to sit on the throne instead of Yudhishthira, and Dhritarashtra would also like that also. But as far as protecting the kingdom, if the Pandavas were just submissive to the Kauravas and allowed Duryodhana to sit on the throne, then you don't have any better asset than them. But the problem is that's not actually how it's supposed to be. But Dhritarashtra burned secretly within himself. Why had the people not cheered his own sons in the same way? Right, but they didn't cheer anybody else. It was just, you know, it's not even when Yudhishthira and all them came. So he's just seeing it, why not my sons? When it was even the other Pandavas, they didn't cheer. It was just Arjuna like that. It means they were impressed by everyone in general, like as students. You know, all the students are so well trained. Then there's Arjuna. But, you know, he's feeling. So we see is just as Kunti's feeling that motherly affection, then Dhritarashtra's burning with you know, his that jealousy and that why his sons are not. If only he could see what was happening. Okay, so we'll stop here. And then tomorrow we'll hear about what Arjuna did and that. Because it's quite, so many things are there, so it itself is its own story. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.